ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guests today are Michael Boris and Alex Liu, who work together at 42 Entertainment, an immersive entertainment company that invites audiences to participate in connected experiences. As a team, they've earned over 100 entertainment and design awards, working with the likes of David Fincher, J.J. Abrams, MTV, Paramount, and countless other household names in media and entertainment. Currently, they're achieving national success with 49 Boxes, a social, story-driven experience where audiences interact with artifacts from the past to unlock mysteries. Michael and Alex, thank you so much for joining us today.
Great to be here.
As a team, you've certainly achieved a lot through your careers. For listeners who aren't already familiar with your work, can you give us a Cliff Notes version of your background?
Yeah, Michael and I pretty much started our official careers, you know, that weren't working at restaurants or bagel places around the same time at Disney. And this was around, what?
Late 1996.
Yeah. And, you know, the internet was just starting to become a viable thing to put into homes. You know, it was 14.4 baud modems were around back then. And Disney started investing a lot in the future of the internet. And so we were both among the first few handful of employees there, and we saw it grow from a room full of people to about 3,000 people. And after a couple of years, we both left different things. Among that is working for places like Warner Brothers.
Yeah, we worked together doing games for Warner Brothers and working on backgrounds for Nickelodeon and finally for Sony. And boy, it just seems like we work for everybody together doing games and marketing and animations.
Yeah, and ultimately we started a very small company together called 3Pin Media, where we continue to do that and often take on new projects. And then when we met and combined forces with 42 Entertainment, we became, you know, essentially the lead creatives and interactive designers of 42 Entertainment.
I see. Now, tell me about 49 Boxes. What is it? What happens?
At 42 Entertainment, what we've done for years is we've built these huge sort of puzzle campaigns where we get millions of people to go out and solve things all around the world. It involves geocaching and artifacts and all these different things. And 49 Boxes is sort of the, I wouldn't say the antithesis of it, but the idea of it was, instead of connecting everybody through their mobile devices and through their internet browsers and, you know, going around the world, what if we did the same kind of strategy where we took some deeply involved puzzles and narrative and put 60 people into a room or 100 people in a room together and actually have them put down their devices and experience something collaboratively where a story would unfold.
I see. Okay.
Do you want to describe what that experience actually, how it goes?
Right. That's what I was wondering. Like, what can an audience, I'm an audience member, I am participating in one of these events. What could I expect to experience? Do I have to give up my phone? Do I actually have to give it to somebody else? Is it blocked? Can I go by myself? How do I need to interact?
You can definitely go by yourself if you like, but the hope is that you bring a friend with you. And the experience can handle between 13 people and really 140 people. And as people walk into our room that we've created for them, they're asked to sit at a table. And they'll notice in the front of the room that there are boxes of all different sizes from the early 1900s to contemporary. And inside them, there are artifacts that are mysterious that they don't know what they are just yet. But soon, as they're delivered to their tables and they're asked to open them up, they'll realize that all the boxes fit together like an intricate puzzle that helped to solve a mystery that's been last for half a century. And the mystery leads to one giant box that's in the front of the room that has 19 locks on it from around the world that has the finale of the story. And so there are different stories that can be told through these boxes. We've done a murder mystery. We've done a love story. And our last version of it is a magic story, where if it wasn't for the people's involvement in unlocking these mysteries, the magic could never have happened. The magic is transported from the magician on stage to the audience.
I see. So they're actively involved and they're taking part in it.
Yeah, I mean, to answer your question from earlier, right? No, we don't actually take away people's phones. But what we found is that, you know, in this day and age where we see people almost never put their phone down, you know, whether we're eating or whether even in a movie theater or, you know, watching TV with the family, it's interesting because all of a sudden we open up these boxes and we're pulling out real things, you know, like you might find a compass that you need to use in one, and, you know, some sort of coin that's magnetized and hangs off a thread in another one, or someone finds a beaker and has to find someone else in the room with parts of a Bunsen burner. You know, all of a sudden the physical becomes all that more engaging than the digital, right? Which is, it's a nice refreshing thing to see. And then, you know, because of the fact that you have a limited set props and items and artifacts at your table or with your group of friends, people are really forced to collaborate throughout the room. And so they're really unlocking the story together.
So obviously it's different from an escape the room there, but there are some parallels. Is there a danger of people sort of spoiling it for future audiences, or is each question result unique to the group that participates?
I think that there's so much going on in the show that it would be impossible for somebody to come out of it and spoil the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had people come to the show several times and not have the same experience, even though it's the same story arc and there's the same finale. There is plenty to do during the experience that's different every time you go. So we haven't had that problem. But uh-huh. To answer your other question, it's the puzzles are the same for whatever chapter that you're going to go to. If someone wanted us to redesign everything, it would take a long, long time, but we think it's unnecessary to do that.
But I think that the real strength of 49 boxes, even though the story, you know, does add up and everybody's helping to unlock that, what we quickly found out when we had people coming back a fourth or fifth or sixth time to shows, I mean, it's weird to have a thing like this and you kind of have, you know, these puzzle groupies, was that the story was interesting. But really, their favorite part was being able to experience and collaborate with new people and do different things. And so to Mike's point, even though, you know, the setup and the ending is usually about, you know, pretty much the same for that chapter, there are so many different puzzle threads. You know, I think that the last time we counted, maybe somewhere between 17 to 20 unique puzzle threads that are all nested. And, you know, it's puzzles and layers and story upon story that, when we've had people come back five or six times, they've never done the same thing twice.
Uh-huh.
And it's really interesting because while you're heating that Bunsen burner across the room, you're seeing somebody put vintage glass slides into a projector, and somewhere else, you know, they've spread out books all over the floor and they're trying to make a physical puzzle out of the pages that they've turned to. So, you know, I think that's sort of the magic of it.
Yeah, it becomes a gathering of these people who have done different things, and they sort of share their experience with each other afterwards as well. So a lot of these people leave as friends who didn't know each other to begin with.
Right.
And where have you seen people, you know, be strangers and then end up going out to dinner together or coming back to the next show together?
It's very nice.
Do you have actors or people who are part of your organization participating within each session so that they can sort of steer or guide if people are, you know, not everybody's as sharp as a tack? And sometimes maybe they are not able to figure out the mystery and you want to keep it to time. I mean, do you have those issues at all?
I wouldn't say that they're issues. We definitely have people that help us to shepherd.
Okay.
Gently.
Right.
And offer as few, you know, clues as possible. You know, in the end, it's not us against the people that are in there. We're on the same team. We want them to succeed.
Of course.
And unlike a room escape where it's possible to, you know, to fail, there's no fail state. We want this whole story to be told, and there is success at the end, and we make sure that happens in a gentle way.
Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have a giant pair of bolt cutters to cut off locks that don't get opened, which we've done before.
Yeah, we do that because a lot of this stuff is truly very, very old, you know, 75-year-old locks and like that. And sometimes even the right key doesn't open the right lock, and you'd be surprised at how happy people are to see something get destroyed in the show. To get to the finale.
Mike says something really important earlier, which is that, Yes, as designers, we're not trying to prove how smart we are. We're actually trying to design experiences that people love and want to share and that they want to do. So, you know, I think that when we talk about puzzles and even the connection you made of like, well, it sort of sounds escape room-like maybe, you know, how do we deal with that? I think our approach, and Mike can definitely expand on this a little bit, is that we're really trying to build things that are fun that everybody can do, mm-hmm. not, you know, challenge them to say like, oh, we bet you're not smart enough to do it, right? I mean, our approach to design is very different.
Yeah, that's very important, I think. It might be things that they've always wanted to do and never knew that they wanted to do. For example, an old TNT plunger like Wile E. Coyote had used, but not to blow something up, but to actually power some device, this ancient device that gives them a clue that helps them to unlock something later on is very, very exciting for us, as well as the people that are able to handle that.
Right, right. Entertainment today is a peculiar place, given the rise of streaming platforms and the unprecedented ability of people to consume entertainment really wherever they want, however they want. And so it's increasingly difficult for traditional media publishers to both help audiences discover their content and then also, you know, certainly for more traditional places like theaters, you know, audiences, getting them to show up at the theater, getting them to do things is a challenge. So I'm curious how you tackle the discovery piece. How do people find out about your shows? What mediums do you use? How do you exploit social? Do you not? Which, you know, what do you find? Is it mostly word of mouth? How does that happen? What's that process?
Because for our day jobs, you know, every day, what we do is really live in that digital world, and we're exploiting all of the different technologies and ways that we can to sort of reach people and audiences. 49 Boxes was really a specific attempt that we wanted to be a part of that was physical and real and involved real people going to a place, and that it was, even though there's a lot of technology behind the scenes, it's not apparent up front. So we feel like it was also good timing when we started about maybe 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago, we started doing this. What we've seen in that time is this huge resurgence of people going to the theater and going to museums and going to special exhibits and also pop-up events and, you know, everything from the Museum of Ice Cream to the Bowie Is, you know, exhibit or the Tim Burton thing at LACMA. We've seen that a lot of people are looking for experiences more than anything else. And for 49 Boxes so far, it really has been word of mouth and special groups of friends. And we haven't done enough shows. We sell out every show that we put out weeks before it actually happens. And that's because part of it, I think, is the mystery and intrigue, and it's cool and it's new and people don't know about it yet.
Yeah, and we haven't, you know, I think that we can put up twice as many shows as we have, but it might take away from how special it is too. And we also try to make the event locations special as well. It's not like we're renting out a restaurant or a VFW hall or anything. No offense to anybody there who owns those. But it's always at some place that's historically significant to the show or means something to
us.
Yeah, to us. And we know that that's going to be exciting for other folks. So yeah, so Alex is right. It's been mostly word of mouth.
I mean, we really haven't, besides doing a couple of interviews and things like that, we haven't actively been promoting the show at all. We've just been showing up and doing it.
So have you noticed any social chatter? I mean, obviously in your day jobs, being aware of those things is part of what you do. So do you notice or track it, or is it just field of dreams? You build it, they will come.
I'd like to say it's the field of dreams thing, but really when after the show happens, I actually like to go and track what people are saying. I mean, that's the truth.
Well, thank you for your honesty.
Yeah, that's the honest truth. And I'll say this, Alex does not. I don't think he cares at all about that.
It's not necessarily whether I care or not. Well,
he knows you're doing it. He doesn't have to. It's redundant effort.
I think that question can break out into two different things, right? I care about what we're going to bring to the show next time and how we're going to make it better and what we're going to do to evolve it. I don't necessarily care to see about the chatter. And I know that if there's something horribly wrong that people are talking about, that Michael will tell me, or if that something's going great. I think, though, you know, part of my thing is that because we do it, that's what we do day in and day out. the last thing I want to do after we have a successful show is jump online and start getting obsessed with our social feeds. So yeah, we are different in that way.
Boy, but if you, I mean, really, if you check out our Twitter or you check out our Instagram, it's sad.
Yeah.
There are two posts for each of them. We have it because we have to have it. But we have this
conversation almost daily. So Mike is sort of, this is sort of a dig on my part right now where I need to start getting more active on doing that.
Well, I guess my question though is, if you're selling out every show, do you need an Instagram? Do you need a Twitter? Are you, if you've only got two posts and you're still succeeding just fine, I mean, why do that? I mean, it's just a question to ask. People do things because everybody's doing them and then they're spreading out their effort. And so if people are looking to people who are pushing boundaries, such as yourself, who are doing something different, who are creating engaging experiences and are realizing that through these engaging experiences, perhaps they don't need to do some of these other things, if they're truly engaging, then that's worth thinking about. And certainly the issue of fun and play is something that we've heard from other people. We've talked about sort of what's happening in media. How do you engage people? And it seems like both that people are, if they're coming back, they're having fun. It's playful. It's enjoyable. It's something that's different and uses their brain in a different way. Who would you say is your audience? You know, it does seem that you have this sort of secret. It's sort of like a pop-up restaurant. If you're in the know, you know about it, which makes it got a cool factor. So who is your audience?
You know, initially it was designed specifically for magicians. And then it just so happened that there was a gaming community that came to one of the shows. And then it became the gaming community as well that we were going for. And then when we were invited to the Future of Storytelling, it became the storytelling community. So we've had very old folks. We've had extremely young kids. We've had men, women. It seems to hit a sweet spot for all of that. We could just say that, I suppose, but it seems that we're hitting all the audiences, and we're very lucky right now with that. And maybe it's because people love, you know, people can identify with a love story. People can identify with a murder mystery, and people can identify with a magic show and interacting with things that remind them of their childhoods. Maybe that's what it all comes down to.
I think that is all true, but I think it also runs a little deeper than that. I mean, you know, one thing that we've seen from a cross-generational standpoint is that, let's say when, you know, a family does come and they have an 11 or 12-year-old kid, it's interesting to watch that family dynamic, right? Because especially watching that kid off of digital, and all of a sudden now they're participating in this family activity where, because it's not about the hardest puzzles and being the smartest person in the room, it's about sort of following the steps and figuring things out and having those aha moments, right? The kid is just as likely as the parent is to learn, you know, something new or to figure something out. And so you see this really cool bonding there. And the other thing that we never intended this for, I mean, really, it was just about having fun for us. And, you know, there's a lot of truth in the fact that the show is fun for us to do because it's almost like the people are performing for us. But before we get into that, you know, we've seen people come up to us. One of our biggest requests is, hey, can we, you know, can you do a private event for us for team building? Because, you know, I've never seen 100 people come into a room that didn't know each other and all leave knowing half the people, and not just knowing them, but have actively engaged and done stuff. And we felt like we unlocked something together. That was never an intention, but it was kind of a nice thing where we've been able to, you know, travel around the country and have these very special events, things that we never would have been invited to, right? And actually have been performers and people just coming up. And so a lot of word of mouth is coming out just from people coming to the show. In fact, one of the things that we said is that every time we have a show, we're booking a new one.
Right. So question for you, if you're asked to go do one of these team building events, makes total sense to me, certainly, that would be something that people would do. How, you know, does it require, purely thinking about business model, does it require you two to be there? It sounds like, you know, all of these things, these part of what makes it so compelling are these artifacts, are these boxes, are these things. Now, all of those things, to feel sincere and genuine and authentic, how do you travel with them? Do you, what's the, like in terms of, I see where it rolls once you're going, how it funds.
It's not cheap, what you're saying.
Well, it's not cheap. And in order to get it going, did you have a GoFundMe to start? How did you prime the pump?
That was three questions that are very deep that you asked right there. And the first one that I can say is that, you know, for as long as I've known Alex and for my whole life, I've been a collector of just stuff. And Alex has some pretty cool stuff too.
I think what he means is that he's a hoarder.
I'm a hoarder. But a hoarder of cool stuff that means something to me. But I don't want to put a lot of my coolest stuff behind a glass case. I want people to be able to interact with it. I want people to have a good time with it. And so this was a good opportunity for it. So there was no GoFundMe. We were the GoFundMe for this thing. We were saying, let's make this as good as we can with whatever, you know, extra stuff and extra money that we have and favors that we can cash in on with friends to make an experience. Now, that was for the first episode. Now, the second episode, the promise was that, hey, we can sell tickets that can help pay for the next one that we do and make that one really, really great.
Right.
That's how we really funded this third one, the magic one, because really, this is true magic apparatus from 100 years ago. This is beautiful stuff.
I think about when you start the experience from that level, where we're not building it going, hey, how can we sell tickets to this? And how can we make it the biggest show ever? Or how can we have it all across the country, right? It was purely a passion project, right? It was all this awesome stuff that Mike had and some of the stuff that I had and went, hey, you know, let's not keep this away from people, but let's have people handle it and touch it and play with it and connect with history. And I think those two things, right, being able to handle something that's historic, right, and also the fact that the experiences are designed from a place of love, from what we do and what we're passionate about, people feel that. It comes across in the show, right? It comes across in the experience where it's not just a bunch of puzzles, but it's very intimate. You know, even with 100 people or 140 people, it still feels like you're getting to do something that you would never be able to do anywhere in the world. And in fact, people have asked us, like, well, you know, what happens if someone breaks that, right? And we're like, well, then that's sort of the casualty of war. You know, I mean, we'll either redesign around it and find something else just as cool, or we'll figure out how to replace it. But the experience of watching people touch those things and interact and be a part of that show, and we sort of feel like they're adding to those objects' history, that's kind of priceless for us. And I know that might sound kind of cheesy, but we really feel that way.
Hey, you asked a question. You know, you said you two actually have to be the ones that perform this thing, and because it's so personal to us. My answer to you is that it depends on who it is that would replace us. For example, we've had people that have approached us and said, hey, you know, I really love this idea. I'm a magician. I'm a collector. There's a guy from Germany who's actually flying in, who's actually interested in taking a look at the show to maybe franchise it in Germany.
I was wondering if it's possible, how scalable is it? And what...
Not at all.
It seems very custom, and that's sort of what makes it amazing and lovely.
Is that we would help build it for him, with him, and make it personal to both us and him.
Right.
So that he could perform it the way that he would like to do it. And with items that he likes, along with what we suggest that would make good gameplay.
Right. So much of your work spans across immersive and interactive media. Do you think that this audience involvement is truly the future of media, or do you think it's just a side thing that people need as they become less connected and more atomized through our devices, that they are hungry for human interaction? And so it's the sort of yin yang situation. Or do you think this is something that will expand and grow all on its own?
Well, I hope that it's here to stay. I hope that it expands and grows. I think there was so long that, look, when I was a kid, it was the arcade. I would go and it was a social experience. And all of a sudden, I could have the arcade experience in my home. And though maybe even the graphics were better, the gameplay was better, but there I was alone in the home. This is special because, I mean, I've got actual physical contact with people. I really hope it stays, not because it'll just benefit us, but I think for the world, it'll benefit for sure.
Right.
I'll say that going back to our approach to this, though, you know, we didn't, to be really frank about it, we didn't really think it out that far, right? It was like, hey, this is something that is fun that we want to do, that we would build and we would want to go to. And that was the genesis of it. But I think that at the core of it, though, the reason why we feel like it can have some longevity, and also seeing people interact with it, why we feel like the show itself and experiences like it will have a bright future, it's really at the end of the day based off of two things, right? It's good storytelling, it's interaction and being rewarded for figuring things out and solving mysteries. And I think that those two things are kind of timeless. I mean, I think that it's built into our DNA to want to know how things work, mm-hmm. you know, and how to, you know, what's inside of that locked box, right? That's just something that is a core thing that we want to know. And so you put some good story and you make it fun and you design it to where it's not frustrating, but it's fun and it's collaborative. And, you know, all of a sudden it takes off.
Right. Right.
You know, our dream actually is to have a couple of home bases throughout the country where different episodes are playing out, where maybe LA is the magic one, and maybe in New York, it's the love story, and in, you know, Seattle, it's the murder mystery. And other people are able to run the show as long as they're as passionate about what it is as we are. That's really right. the hope. And at that point, we better have a better Instagram and a better Twitter account than we have now, I'll tell you that.
Well, maybe you won't need one, is all I'm saying.
Well, let's hope not.
You can't say that to Michael because you're just feeding my, you know, laziness.
Well, I've run through our time. I really appreciate that you have taken me through it. It sounds like a fantastic experience. I actually love magic, and we worked on An Honest Liar, the trailer for the movie about the amazing Randy. I don't know if you're familiar with him at all.
He's fantastic.
I want to go when I'm in LA next. I've got to check
when
it out.
When are you in LA next?
I'm not sure. Probably in the next 4 months, maybe. I don't know. I'll reach out and let you know. And I'd be by myself, so we got to be okay with people who come by themselves.
Oh, that's completely fine.
Can we make a small plug?
Oh, please, yes. How can people find out about you and your 49 boxes?
It's very easy. It's 49boxes.com. Right now, the only shows that are scheduled that are upcoming in Los Angeles, but we have, I think, tickets for two shows right now. One of them is very, very close to selling out. They're both in March, and then we'll be adding shows very soon. And it also looks like we may be in Seattle in May, I think. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on, and we'd love to have your audience and anybody who sounds interested in this kind of thing to come on by and experience it for themselves.
Yeah, we'll have some fun together for sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. Have a great night, and thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gabriel.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who've helped bring the program to life. First, my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open. And of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media. And a big thank you to our guest, Michael Boris and Alex Liu. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience. Thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.